Hey, Mr. One Stop. I'm looking for a record and it goes like this. Dun 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 dun.
Addicted to the Needle.
The podcast where a vinyl addict meets his dealer. I'm your dealer, Ben Schulman.
And I'm Patrick Foisy, the addict.
And how are you on this fine day, episode 72? 72, wow. We made it.
So we're going to do things a bit differently this time. You know?
You've always got something, eh? So you can never just be like, let's just start the podcast, play records. You got to do it different.
Well,
what do you got?
You know, when I usually edit this podcast, I come up after listening to it and editing it.
Yeah,
I come up with the title for the show.
Right.
This time, I came up with the title first.
Ooh.
So I already have a title. Do you want to hear it?
Is it Ben Schulman is the best record dealer ever? And then in brackets, I love him so. Is that the title?
No, I'm keeping that one for episode 100.
Ooh.
So for this one, the working title is The Shrinking Want List.
The Shrinking Want List. Huh. Because I think I could surmise why that is the title of this episode. Is it because of the MG and the Escorts thing? Or does it have to do with something else I have in the box today?
Both.
Oh.
I think 2019 and 2020 have been good years for unburdening my want list of the top wants.
That's right.
I'm thinking, of course, about the local wants.
Yeah, like our Quebec, Montreal, Quebec, and Canadian stuff.
And Canadian.
Yeah.
Of course, at the top of my soul want list, and that could be, in general,
right,
was, of course, Jackie Shane, A New Way of Lovin'.
You're welcome.
thank you, dear dealer.
Yeah, and yeah, that's right. And I got that from our fella Graham there in Toronto, who you met up with just a couple weeks ago, right?
Yeah.
Or like a month ago.
Shout out Graham.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for getting it to me, getting it to Pat.
It's in good hands.
Yeah, a lot of Canadian people involved with getting that record to you.
At the top of my Quebec want list, maybe a year or so ago, was Vapeur Mauve by The Haunted.
That's right, the French version of Purple Haze. And you know what? Now it's so funny because every time I think about that record, I think about, and I think you must have told the story on the show when you DJ'd it and then like these kids came up to you and were like, oh my God, like that's so cool, a French version. Like that's like the best thing about those kinds of records is getting that reaction is worth like every penny of, you know.
That was the last time I DJ'd before COVID hit.
Oh yeah, it's true. Wasn't it like some outdoor gig and it was like minus 20 or something? Or,
no.
Because didn't you do some kind of like around, or was that the day you DJ twice in one day or something? Or
yeah, that's another story.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
No, it was a film premiere. The film premiere for Jukebox.
Oh, right. Yeah, the documentary about Dennis Pantis, the Phil Spector of Quebec. And I say that very
confidently.
Sure. Shout out to Dennis.
And of course, you know, I'm wearing my Jimi Hendrix t-shirt today.
That's right. Oh, perfect. Yeah. Wow. Look at you. Prepared. Yeah,
you can't tell behind my voice shield.
Yeah, we're both in our like little shield. It's like we're in our pods doing our podcast.
And last show was my top garage want.
Canadian garage.
No, Quebec.
Oh.
Even Montreal.
That's right.
MG and the Escorts.
That's right. MG and the Escorts, Someday Fool. And those guys, they were West Island guys. They come from the same part of town that you and I both grew up in. And yeah, that's like super cool. To me, it's just like it's, you know.
Coolness reigns in that area.
Oh, yeah. Coolness really reigns in the West Island. Yeah. Anytime I think of Montreal, I'm like, you know, forget the Plateau, forget St. Henry, forget old Montreal. It's really like Beaconsfield and
There's
Kirkland.
Something in the water.
There's something happening in Pierrefonds.
And but finally, yes. today.
The big, it's here. It's in the box. It's for you.
It was the top of the Canadian Garage want list. And frankly, I didn't think I would ever put my hands on that record ever.
Well, the dealer, talking about myself in the third person, came through. And finally, I have for you Go Away by The Underworld. Without a doubt, forget best Canadian garage record. I think this is just one of the best garage records ever, period.
It's punk before punk.
It's so punk. And like that guitar break in the middle where it's like, the guy's not that good of a guitarist, so he just starts. Like, oh my God, it almost sounds like Charlie Brown's teacher or something. It's so wacky. It's such a killer.
And we featured that track on the show as one of your best records in your collection.
You know what? And that was a record that I wanted for so long. Like, I think back to when I was in high school and I used to, like, rip tracks from YouTube. And I just, like, remember sitting in class in grade 10, like, with my headphones on, like, listening to this. And I'm like, I'll never have this record. And, well, now I have one and you have one. So
if I'm correct, you passed along your own personal copy.
Yes. So the copy that you're getting here was my copy, my personal copy for, I think I've had it there for like 3 or 4 years. I got it from a guy out west from Vancouver. And apparently, like, this particular copy was in a box with, like, someone had basically found a box of 20 copies. So old store stock with the delete punch in it. So I guess like they were all copies that, because it's a Toronto record. It's kind of strange, but I mean, hey, look, these labels were distributed all over the country. So so I think the guide had like a bunch of them. It was actually an eBay score. I bought it on eBay. I paid a pretty penny for it.
So I guess you upgraded it?
Yeah, well, the one that I found last week that I'm keeping is in the exact same shape, but it doesn't have a punch hole.
Whoa. It looks mint to me.
It's mint.
And it's in its original company sleeve,
in the
too.
Original Fonadisc distribution sleeve. And it's so funny. I remember seeing this post, like, not too long ago somewhere on Facebook, one of these, like, old-time record collector guys in his 70s who claims that any record with a punch hole in the label is considered valueless.
We've talked about the original, the origins of the punch hole.
Yeah, like the deletes, essentially. It's the same as like finding an LP with like a clipped corner, you know. This was just a way to indicate that it, you know, was now to be discounted and distributed to, like, you know, Woolworths or something like that.
I'm very happy with this mint copy. I can't imagine how fine is your own copy, but
it's the same. It really, like, it you know, certain records, like, I'll have two copies because they're both in really bad shape, and I'm like, I'll just hang on to both of them until a better one. You know, that does happen often, but with this one, it was just like, I'll give Pat the one with the hole in it.
So you got your copy, your new copy, on a big dig.
That's right.
So, okay, let's just start from the beginning. So we've talked about this before. You went on this big dig.
Yeah.
It started when you were on vacation this summer.
So, yeah, it started off, Taryn and I were in Halifax out in Nova Scotia. And
eating
on the way,
some donair.
Yeah, eating donair and scallops and all that delicious stuff. we do talk about food a lot on this show. and on the way back, I'd stopped to pick up a copy of another crazy rare Canadian record, this record, The Stone Men, in the evening in faded colors on the Maritime record label in New Brunswick from a New Brunswick dealer. And when I was out there, the guy was like, hey, want to see something? And then shows me this room just full of 45. So I just go, I'll be back.
Was it an attic?
Yeah, it was kind of like in an attic. And like a lot of the records were in like these, like, on these like overhead shelves and like not in boxes. So it's like I was like had to kind of like hold them while pulling them out without them like falling on my fucking head.
Were they unsleeved?
Oh, no, these were all in sleeves. And amazingly, a lot of this stuff was from a record shop that had closed called Discadia. So like Acadia discs from this tiny, tiny town in New Brunswick. So tons of French stuff, just unplayed, original sleeve. Like it's just amazing to see records that are, you know, 55 years old, just brand new, you know, with like this Discadia stamp on it. I'm like, that's such a cool name for a store. And I had actually been to the town where this record store was located, and it's literally just like a train stop, a post office, like not even a Tim's. Like, not even a Tim Hortons, sorry for our... we would say Tim's, Tim Hortons, which is basically Canada's Dunkin' Donuts. Everybody right. at this point knows what a Dunkin' Donuts is. Coffee I mean, Tim Hortons donuts. Is. Yeah, yeah. So I decided to go back.
So the first time you went, you didn't want to leave your girlfriend sitting in the car.
Yeah, Taryn and Hank, my big boy, my big dog, were in the car. And I'm like, okay, obviously I'm not doing this now.
The dilemma I've been through many times while on vacation.
Well, yeah, like
my wife is very accommodating. She always has a book in her hand and goes and finds the closest coffee shop.
Yeah, and the funniest thing is like
an hour.
Yeah, but you'll also be the kind of guy who will go like dress shopping for her, you know. Sure. So, but yeah, that's just it. You know what? It's just like, and I hate, because there's been various times I've been on like road trips, like out and about, like with friends who like aren't into records, and then it's just like, I go in and there's like tons of them. It's like, you know what? It's always just easier for me to like make a trip and just go back alone because I have all the time in the world. So I decided, I said to the guy, I'm like, look.
But the reason why I'm asking is that you had to have a clue that it was worth going back.
So, oh, yeah.
So he showed you the room and you just like
pulled out. I just pulled out like, yeah, like just like a small pile, and it was just tons of new old stock of like stuff on Rio and quality and just like these original Canadian records. And I was like,
just from that little sample.
Yeah. And I'm like, cool, I'll come back. So I did.
And he was open to it.
He was totally open to it. And, excuse me, I'm belching, belching up my, well, you gave me carbonated water here with lemon in it. So now
I'm a nice
burping.
Host.
You are a nice host. I will say this, the prices, it wasn't like I was going in and it was like, okay, they're $1 each. Everything was looked up.
Yeah.
Everything was looked up. And it's like, I'm bringing you the underworld. And it's like, it ain't like I paid $5 for it.
No,
And that's the thing, you know, as being the dealer, and, you know, this happens all the time where it's like, I have to explain it to people where it's like, yeah, there's sometimes you get crazy lucky, because also on this trip, I stopped and dug through a guy's garage and pulled out 500 records and he only charged me $100 for 545s. It kind of balances out, but there are definitely times where it's like, you know, you pay the premium, you know, you can't always make the biggest profit on every single record, which is like, I think a lot of these digger type guys who, you know, go to the Salvation Army every day, it's just like, everyone wants to, of course, everyone wants to find something for 25 cents and sell it for $500. But that doesn't always happen. You know, here I'm paying a premium, but I have no problem. It rarely happens, you know, but
a crapshoot.
In this situation, it's like, I have no problem paying good money for good records, you know? So I think, and I think that's part of the reason what got me back in was because it's not like I'm going to show up there, dig for 2 days, pull out 8 records and be like, oh, okay, I can give you $100. Like, no, you know, I bought a lot of stuff, you know, and I took a chance on a lot of stuff and, you know, and amazingly, also while on this trip, I saw an ad. Some woman just had like a little stack of unsleeved 45s for like $20. And I'm like, I'll go and take a chance. And I found a copy of the Stone Men in there.
Oh, another one.
Yeah. And the woman tried to give me the records for free. She's like, just take them. They're old and beat up. And I'm just like, I'll look at them anyway, and like I see the Stoneman 45, and like I go into my pocket and I have a 50, and I go to give her the $50 bill, and she's like, "Are you nuts?" I'm like, "Just take it, just take the $50," and she's like, "No, like let me get you change." I'm like, "Lady, just take the $50, just take the $50," you know. And like her two little kids were standing there, and I was like, "Go take your kids to Toys R Us or something." Like, here's the $50. She's like, "Oh my god, thank you, you're so generous." I'm like, I show her the Stoneman 45. I'm like, this made me like very, very happy. She's like, oh, I'm so glad. Everyone out in the Maritime, they're the nicest people in the world, man.
Of course.
They really are the nicest people.
They're part of Canada.
Exactly. You know what they say about Canadians? We're very nice. We really are. So why don't I play you? Why don't we start with something?
Canada.
I'm wearing my Canada hat. Why don't I play something? So I got a couple of different things for you, obviously.
So I still want to know about that digging trip. So you spent like how many hours in that attic?
You know what? maybe 6 or 7, and then I stopped. And I was still there for another day after that, and I didn't even continue digging because I knew
you didn't have any money left.
Well, at this point, I knew how it was going to go, like financially, and no one else is going to this place. No one else is, you know, it's not like anyone. It's not like I have to worry. I'll just go back in a couple months and do more. You know, the guy, like, I've developed a relationship with the guy. Super cool.
That's funny how enough. It works.
And you know, it's his name's Pat. So people named Pat are usually pretty damn cool. So I decided, I'm like, you know what? I think I've hit the limit here on like what I'm going to like do this trip. And the guy said, he's like, yeah, come back whenever you want. You know, you're always open to do it. So,
Cause you paid up also.
Well, that's just it. You know, yeah, the guy, we were both very happy with the deal. Yeah, I'll just go back another time. And, yeah, but I did plenty of other side digging there. Like I said, I ended up going into this guy's garage. He said, he's like, oh, I have like a couple thousand 45s. I got there and there was easily like 40 or 50,000.
Whoa.
So I went the night I got into town. This is out in middle of nowhere, New Brunswick. I spent 5 hours and I didn't even go through half of it. And I was exhausted because I'd just driven 10 hours by myself. So I went back like 2 days later in the morning and finished it. And from that guy, yeah, I think I bought about 800 records and paid a total of like $200. It's like the kind of dreams you have.
What was in there, like, generally?
Toby Legend.
What?
Yeah.
I passed on the copy of that because I...
Yeah.
It's expensive.
It's a big Northern record. It's a big Northern Soul record. And it's like, I've had it a couple of times and I offered it to you at least once.
Yeah.
It's a good tune, but like, not for the money.
For the price, yeah.
And the thing is, when I got there, the guy told me, he's like, oh, I've had this stuff for ages. It's been picked over by so many people. Oh! I'm like, okay, obviously.
So a lot of soul?
Quite a bit, amazingly, of like American soul records. You wonder, like, this is
so just that record paid for
paid for the whole thing, you know. And I just took a chance on anything that looked interesting. The thing is, most of the records were in rough shape.
Okay.
Like, it was a lot of unsleeved, like, it's like, yeah, it's nice to find the Toby Legend, it ain't mint, you know. Maybe it's G plus, but it's the kind of record that it always plays pretty well, but like, still, you know. So just a lot of interesting, you know, Canadian, funny enough, no garage really, but just like some good rockabilly and just, you know, I was very happy. Tons of stuff I had no idea what it was, and I'm just like, they're basically free. So just anything that looked remotely interesting, I just, just grabbed. So it was an awesome trip.
And so the one you're going to play is from that shop or from a garage.
Yeah. So you know what? I'll start off with one that came directly from that, hang on, let me just work with the spindle here. Yeah, this one came from that garage. This is a record I've had for a while. In fact, it used to be in my DJ box. It probably still is. This tune is called Magic Saxophone by Jimmy Castor on Smash. He's mostly known for, he had like some more like disco-y stuff, the Jimmy Castor bunch, like in the 70s.
But I think I might have a record.
So he has one on Smash that was a big hit called like Hey Leroy, Your Mama's Calling or something. Like that you might have. But I think you're going to dig this one, right? Because I remember I actually found my first copy of this down in Maine a couple of summers ago.
Yeah, it sounds like an instrumental.
It's...
we'll play.
Is it? Like kind of like, let's play it and then we'll talk about it. So this is Magic Saxophone on Smash, 1966 by Jimmy Castor.
Dusty sand.
Yeah. It's magical.
It's gritty.
I do have a Jimmy Castor. I have two 45s from him. I have the one you mentioned.
The Haley Roy or Mama's Calling You.
Yeah. I think I usually play the B-side.
Yeah.
Ham Hawks Espanol. I think it's an instrumental.
Yeah. That's why I thought for a sec, because like this one, yeah, there is obviously like a vocal on it, but it's just a bit different, you know, because he's like singing about finding a saxophone in an antique store. Which
it's
is
so
like,
me.
Yeah.
It's so me. That's how I spend my weekends.
What's the other one you have by
him? Block Party.
On what label?
It's on Jet Set.
Oh, okay. Because I have one by him on Decca called In a Boogaloo Bag.
Oh.
Which
I think
cool.
Block Party is the B side, and the A side is It's What You Give.
Oh, no, I don't have never seen that
like
one.
Blue Jet Set label.
Interesting.
So
that was one of the ones from the garage. And like I said, there's still more for me to go through. You know, again, as there's only so many hours in a day. Yeah, that was just like one of those ones where I was like, oh, it's a record I already have, so like I'm happy to sell it, you know?
And it's probably a track I could actually play myself on. Aha. Why, you ask?
No, I didn't say anything, but sure, why? Well, I just look puzzled.
You did.
Yeah.
Because there's cowbell on it. I could play
like the
a
one instrument
cowbell.
You can rock.
Yeah.
And you can like play like a note on a bass. Kind of.
Well, yeah, kind of. Yeah, but that I could rock. I could rock the cowbell. You might be a bit too young, but early was it? I can't remember what era of Saturday Night Live was, but there was like a sketch where more cowbell.
So
who's the actor that
isn't Will Ferrell in it no, it's Christopher Walken.
It's Christopher Walken.
So the character that he's playing, funny that you bring that up. The character that he's based off of in that sketch is this guy Bruce Dickinson, was a music producer and is a big 45 collector who I've actually met at Allentown. Yeah.
Which was last weekend,
which, of course, we could not attend because...
We salute all our American friends that were there.
Yeah, and I saw people post pictures. You know, there's always good stuff to find there. You know, when you have, like, 50 guys in a room selling just 45s, more than 50, like 70 dealers, everyone finds something cool.
Especially this year, you didn't have to fight over the Brits invading
They can still fly. They probably came over.
No, I saw it on social media. They were Britless.
Oh, yeah. Well, they were Canada-less too, even though there's not like there's a lot of us from Canada that I really ever go down. I mean, I haven't been to Allentown in 5 or 6 years, but...
So you met the guy there.
Yeah, I met him several times, yeah.
And he was known for playing the cowbell?
No, he was known for, like, yelling. Like, he had something to do, like, the sketch was based off of some instance that he had in the studio yelling about more cowbell. Like, it's kind of a strange story, but anyhow. But, yeah, it's Bruce, and he's a nice guy, definitely. I think I've sold him stuff online before, too.
Oh, he didn't yell at you.
No, he did not yell at me. So let's do some more music. You got a record for us to hear?
You're saying this casually, as if you didn't know I was ready dying.
For your, to do your fucking segue. I'm very cursy this morning.
No.
Dying. Because every time we talk, every time before a show, you're like, oh my God, something I'm so excited to play for you. I'm like, Pat, you say that every show. But are you really excited about this one?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
No, I am.
Big actor.
Okay, so I gave you a hint, didn't I?
I'm pretty sure I just saw what it is.
Oh,
very quickly.
You know,
is it Hully Gully Papa?
Yes, it is.
Wow, that was. I'm pretty good, eh?
You are.
All I saw was a white label and like kind of like a little thing on the side of my.
And you saw the B side. You didn't even see the.
Yeah, that's pretty good, eh?
So the clue I gave you was that it's Richard Berry under a pseudonym.
I had no idea. What's it? Is Jasper Woods or something? Yeah.
So he was well known for writing Louie Louie.
And yeah, of course, and Have Love Will Travel. And he did all kinds of cool stuff.
So obviously, you know that track.
Louie Louie?
No, Hully Golly Papa.
It'd be like Louie Louie. No, never heard of it. I've heard. I've never had this record before, but I know it's been like a big one in the R&B popcorn scene.
That's the perfect description for it. It's from 1961, so let me hand it to you.
Let's see this beautiful copy.
Was it worth it?
Yeah, it looks pretty nice, eh? So how did you find out that it was... I had no idea this was Richard Berry. Where did that piece of information stem from?
Well, when you force yourself to write your little stickers, you sort of do a little research to add like a little trivia to your...
Interesting.
To your little stickers.
Wow, yeah.
The rest I wrote, Killer Popcorn New Breed Dancer. Jasper Wood is a pseudonym for Richard Berry who wrote Louie Louie.
Huh. Interesting. Well, now it's like I'm listening to it with fresh ears because I've never really I know what his voice sounds like. So it's going to be interesting to be like, oh yeah, that is him.
So I don't have to sell you on this one, but I hope the listeners will.
This is a great track. All right. So on the VPM record label, very nondescript, bland looking, as our friend Napoleon 67 would say, very communist looking block record label, VPM Records, Hully Gully Papa by Jasper Woods, apparently a.k.a. Richard Berry.
This record, the cool scale of on a cool scale of 1 to 10, it's like 20.
It's it's mod as hell. It's
I need to change my underwear.
Jesus. Musically, it's a lot like, you know, like a Mel Torme, I'm Coming Home, very cool.
Well, yeah, it's minor key vibe, New Breed. Yeah,
definitely sounds like Richard Berry for sure. It's him. But one thing that I was remarking while listening to it is that what a clean recording for like a 61. Like, usually some of these records are kind of like rougher edged. It's like whoever the hell was, you know, manning the control booth, you're managing, like, man, it's like, it's really, it's a very clear, nice sounding recording. Yeah, it's fine.
And
again,
talks about the mashed potato and doing the chicken and
yeah, you know,
everything I love in the R&B track.
Yeah, just one of those dance craze records. But yeah, it's just it's so it's just a nice crisp clean recording and great. So can I counteract now with let's
good
let's,
luck.
Yeah, no, it's well
you did with the Underworld, but
yeah, well here's something a bit different. Let's take things a bit further south.
I recognize that label.
So this is another one from The Garage in the middle of nowhere, New Brunswick, where I spent 2 days. Last week. When I found this, I went, oh, yeah, this is Pat 100%. Here is a ska reggae version of a Beatles song, a classic Beatles song, and I know this one.
I've wanted this record.
I'm glad this. So again,
this
making that want
so
list
me.
Just a little bit smaller. This is the incomparable Prince Buster, who I would say is really the
godfather of
the godfather of ska. Yeah, man, like so many good records. Here he is doing the Beatles' Obladi Oblada, which is kind of cool because that song, like, already is kind of a ska song. You know, that's kind of what Paul McCartney was going for, was like that island sound. So it's kind of funny that, you know, here you have a Jamaican guy doing it. So when I dug this out, I was like, oh, God, I know where this is going, and I know a certain podcast I will be playing this on.
I'm just curious. Was there many, like, old Jamaican records in that?
This was the only one.
That's so weird to me.
Yeah. And how it ended. Like, again, that's, like, you know, doing this in Canada, you know, digging for records where it's just, like, there's just so many times. And the next one that I'm going to play for you, too, it's just, like, again, it's, like, how is this here? It's, like, you know, that's always one of the biggest fascinations for me is just, like, how did this get from Jamaica? Because it's not like these records were ever pressed in Canada. Well, some of them were, some Prince Buster stuff, you know, and like distributed very locally in Toronto. And it's like,
but
that's probably
a Jamaican.
Oh, this is 100% a Jamaican pressing on his own Prince Buster label.
It's pretty clean for
a Jamaican record. Yeah, definitely. You got to figure it was probably someone who had it from Toronto who moved out to New Brunswick at some point, or someone bought it on vacation. It's like, I always wonder, it's like, how did it get there? Anyway, let's wonder about it while we listen. Obladi Oblada, the Beatles tune, done by Prince Buster and his All-Stars.
Desmond and Molly Jones. Hey! they go sing bass with the band.
Hey!
Doo-da-dee, doo-da-da, life goes on.
Hey!
La-la-la-la, life goes on. Doo-da-dee, doo-da-da, life goes on.
Hey!
La-la-la-la, life goes on. Doo-da-dee, doo-da-da, life goes on.
Life is just going to go on after I pay you.
Oh, it's not that expensive.
All the money I have in my pocket.
It's not that expensive. But
I like to hear that.
You know what? And it's just like one of those records, like, you know, like you're going to play this out and people are going to love that.
I could do an entire set of Jamaican covers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's amazing, you know, what's also always blows my mind about a lot of these Jamaican records is that they'll look pretty battered, but, like, that sounded pretty good, eh?
It sounded perfect
to me. I looked at it, like, yeah, cleaned up pretty nice. I cleaned it up this morning especially if we're ever going to play something on the show, I like to just make sure it's as clean as can be, try and get some of the schmutz out of those grooves. But, yeah, I figured that was right up your alley. Directly from a garage in rural New Brunswick, the last place you would expect to find Jamaican record.
Well, I feel like I should jump in right away.
Oh yeah, let's go.
I was gonna play this at the end of the show. We'll find something.
We'll
else.
Finish off with something else.
Just because I was gonna feature a ska track myself.
Oh, cool!
And this was obviously on my want list.
Yeah, man, let's island show. I apologize to everybody for what I just did there, man. Okay, man, what you playing, man?
Jesus. talking about Prince Buster as a staple of, you know, Jamaican music.
Jamaican music, man. Yeah, for
in
sure.
The early '60s, one of the bands that were legends that I got to see live a few times are the Scatolites.
Nice. Yeah, that's right.
And the other big record label, aside from
Studio One and Studio Prince One Buster's
and
label,
Prince Buster,
yeah,
was a Coxone.
Coxone.
And I have an instrumental, so it's an up-tempo ska dancer about a famous detective. So this is going to go in my spy suite. That's
is it Inspector Gadget?
I
don't know, it was just a guess.
Early '60s, did he exist?
I think
so. I remember him from the 80s.
Wait, maybe not. No. I don't know why I thought he was a '60s cartoon. Maybe he was, I don't know anyway.
But this detective, I think, was from the '50s even.
Is it so, Man from U.N.C.L.E.? I don't know.
Nope. And for the record, I'm looking for a version of 007.
Dick Tracy.
That's the one I'm going to play.
Okay, okay. I'm just thinking of detectives from that era. Sorry.
I'm looking for a version of the James Bond theme. The title is called Jet 707 or 007.
Right.
A really rare version, you know, a ska version of the James Bond theme.
Oh, yeah, I think that sounds vaguely familiar.
I've missed a few auctions.
And
it goes for big bucks.
You ended up getting that Do the Monkey with James, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that one's killer. Yeah. That one always makes me laugh, because that's an American 45, and if I'm not mistaken, it's like, you can get the album that it's on for like $15, but the 45 is, you know,
yeah,
10 times, more like 20 times.
So on the B-side, have a look at the B-side.
I guess someone wrote ska on it with
yep.
pen.
Oh,
My Girl by Jackie Opal.
But it's not, you know, the Motown hit.
It's not?
Nope.
Huh. What is it?
Oh, you want to play?
I kind of want to hear like just a snippet of the B-side. Let's just do this. You don't have to turn the mics off. We'll just, okay, sorry. Got the spindle going in. Let's see. I
love you, my girl. I love you, my girl. I don't need $1 million.
It's great, and it's funny. It's more straight up soul than ska. You know, it's I have one Jackie Opal. What is it? Cry Me a River. It's such a good soul ballad. Oh, that's kind of cool.
I do have My Girl. We played on this ska version. We played on this show.
Right.
But no, that's not the one.
So the Scatolites doing Dick Tracy.
It's an instrumental.
And if I'm not mistaken, it looks like someone wrote Shuffle and Ska on the label. Shuffle written in marker or and shuttle. Ska
in,
or shuttle.
In,
shuffle.
In pen.
Yeah. So, you know, it's the real deal. And it's so funny. I found what's always so confusing with Jamaican records is I found a blank label 45.
There's tons of them.
And it was, funny enough, on orange vinyl. And I had to listen to it multiple times and then went through like two YouTube playlists and finally figured out what track it was. And it was something by the Wailers.
Where's that record?
What?
Where's that record?
Now?
Yeah.
Nah, it's in like Japan or something already.
Yeah.
No, but you, but again, if I thought you would have,
okay,
like, again, for what it was worth and what it sounded like, I didn't think you would have any.
I'll trust you on that.
Yeah, trust me on that one. It's okay. I have some other records for you. Okay, let's not give me shit today. Anyway, let's continue with our Jamaican theme. Scatolites doing Dick Tracy. Let's do this. Yeah, man.
You know, there's one.
That was so cool. That is very. That is very you.
There's one redeeming quality about ska. It just makes you happy. It makes you smile.
There's something just about that offbeat. You know,
it's positive music. How can you not be happy
that and
listening
like,
to that?
And a ska set's like perfect. You know, for if you're doing like a patio, like afternoon drinking beer DJ set, it's like the best kind of stuff funny enough, I remember like when I was doing the mess around night with my former DJ partner who shall not be named. but I remember when we did, remember we DJed outside the Belmont and you came and spun with us. Yep. We did that. Mm-hmm. Remember he played some,
that
I remember like
street fair.
It was a street fair, mural fest on St. Laurent Boulevard here. And, I remember he played some, like he did like a ska set like in the afternoon. I was like, then like, you know, he's a shit person, but his records were great. hope you're not listening. I don't give a fuck. But yeah, it's like I always remember that. It's just like it was like such a nice vibe, like a sunny Saturday afternoon in the city with like drinking a beer and like listening to that, like just like a whole ska set is like perfect. It's like perfect hanging out in the afternoon, tunes, weather, you know. It's a good time. It's a good time.
I agree.
All right, so ready for another track?
Shoot.
So now we're going to change up musical stylings again, going from ska to your favorite, Boogaloo.
Ooh. So is that straight, pure Boogaloo?
This is straight Boogaloo.
Latin Boogaloo.
So this is on the Decca label. It is called Johnny's Boogaloo by Johnny Zammit. And this is a real two-sider. The flip is also, it's a tune called Harlem Boogaloo. Also by Johnny
Zammit.
I think
I've heard this before.
It's a rare one. It's a tough one to find. And this I found in a different part of rural New Brunswick. I had stopped. I was on my way back home. And I remembered, I'm like, I was driving through this really, really, really tiny town in northern New Brunswick. And I'm like, I think I have a guy's like phone number who I had met once who has records around here. I was right. And the funny thing is, you know, here in Quebec, you know, we speak French, obviously, and Pat's first language is French, and I am fluent in French as well as my second language, but the French...
Very evident by my accent.
Mais oui, là. But the way they speak French in northern New Brunswick is a whole different ballgame, man.
They don't speak it, they sing it.
Les Acadiens, the Acadian French accent in the Maritimes, or as they call it out there, chiac. That's like, you know. So I go over to this guy's place, and
he was
Acadian. Acadian, like northern New Brunswick, and just like, I understand French when someone's speaking to me in French. You can't, like, this guy would ask me a question, and I'd be like, what? You know, like, and I was speaking to him in French the whole time.
They also speak Fringlish.
Yeah, well, they a bit, but, like, they speak very fast, and it's just a very thick accent. And, of course, like, up here in northern, I'm like, what kind of records am I going to find, like, you know, 20 kilometers from the Quebec border, you know? And here's this Boogaloo 45, you know, like, what? And the second, I saw this, and I was like, Pat's lucky it's not a Canadian pressing, because if it was a Canadian pressing, I would have been like, oh, shit, this is going into my database. But it's an American Decca, just like, again, just totally killer Latin Boogaloo music. And it's like, again, what is this doing in a freaking basement in like northern New Brunswick? Who knows? But now it's here. And
did you grab a few from there?
Oh, I bought like 145s from the guy.
So if you tally up everything you bought during the last week,
yeah,
how much? A few thousand
45s, or
yeah,
I think yeah, probably over 1,000. I came home with.
Okay,
it was a good trip. It was a good trip. Anyway. Johnny's Boogaloo, Johnny Zammit, Z-A-M-O-T, I don't know. Anyway, I think you're really going to dig this one. Real two-sider, so I'll play it this side, and you'll discover the other side later, and I think you'll be very happy. So let's do it.
Señor.
I have to apologize.
For what?
For doubting you when I said, yeah, is it like straight up Boogaloo?
Yeah, pretty good, eh?
This is...
Yeah, coming home.
If you're wondering what I play during a mod night, I have a Boogaloo set and it sounds just like that.
Yeah, it's got that Pete Rodriguez kind of feel, and it's, you know, it starts off with hand clapping and again it's just I can just never get over the fact it's just like that came from some Acadian guy's basement, you know what. And of course there was no other Boogaloo style records or like even like American soul, it's just like, but somehow this thing ended up where it did.
And it says from Decca album DL4945, Tell It Like It Is.
And that album, I looked it up, is worth like a lot of money. The album's like a fortune.
Yeah, for some reason, the Boogaloo albums are comparable in prices with the 45.
Yeah.
It you won't find that like necessarily in soul.
Well, it depends, yeah. But it's like mentioning like that Monkey with James thing before, where it's like the LP is affordable. Because it's usually in a lot of those cases with soul music is that the albums aren't that great. You know, it'll have like one or two really good cuts, and the rest is all just like cover versions. For me, with like 60 soul albums, it's like there's certain ones that are just outstanding. But also, it's just the album covers are gorgeous, like those original 60s covers, where musically overall, like I think like the Latin like Boogaloo albums, it's like overall as an LP they're like really good, you know. It's kind of like going into like jazz territory where it's like the less, record, you know, where like
less fillers,
there's less filler with like a lot of soul albums, especially like earlier soul LPs, like even early like Motown albums. It's like, you know, and it's funny, a lot of those have like come down in value. Like when I was started collecting them, when I like, you know, 15, 16 years ago, like when I was a little kid, like they were a fortune, those records. But like now it seems like they're quite easy to get your hands on. Like, but I think just overall, like musically, like, you know, like a Ray Barretto album overall is just a better quality collection of music than like, you know, I think of like the Heatwave album by Martha and the Vandellas, which is like such a beautiful album cover, but every track is just like some cover of some schmaltzy, you know, white people music. Like, you know, that was popular
because they pumped those out.
Yeah, well, because the thing is, that was at a point when an LP was just a vessel, you know, it was like an afterthought. It was like, oh, Heatwave's a big hit right now, so let's just throw out an album, you know. That was like the thought process. But
yeah, it was more of a marketing ploy.
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't until like the later 60s when an LP was like an entity on its own, not just to, you know, sell
a collection of singles.
Yeah, exactly.
So we
where are we now?
Hey, just like last episode, we really went around the world on this.
Yeah, we've been to Jamaica. One. We've been to the Bronx, I guess. Say Johnny's Boogaloo. You know, it's Latin music, but that's like American Latin music. That's like, you know, to me, that's like the sound of New York, you know.
But it is Boogaloo.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's, you know, sometimes when I see an English title on a Boogaloo track, I'm hesitant because usually I'm disappointed.
Yeah.
Because they'll go more of a poppy, you know, they're shooting for, you know, the masses.
Yeah.
And it's not like pure Latin Boogaloo.
Oh,
sound.
That is, yeah.
But that is.
Well, and I think like the term Boogaloo too, where it's just like, you know, that's Boogaloo music. And then, you know, the Boogaloo, like kind of like the dance craze, like in the black community around the time, like 67, like you think of like a record, like My Baby Likes to Boogaloo by Don Gardner. It's like, that ain't
Boogaloo
music.
We've referenced many times.
Of course. Cause I mean, that's like one of the best records ever. Like, I mean, that record starts off, it rips right through your freaking soul.
One of the best bass lines ever.
Yeah, and that opening riff, you know. But it's like, I think, you know, that's like that was more Boogaloo, like that is just, it was just like a dance craze kind of. And it's like, this is actually Boogaloo music. I would never consider My Baby Likes to Boogaloo a Boogaloo track, or even just like that instrumental there, or a Boogaloo by Timmy Thomas. Like, it's not boogaloo music. It's just like, it's just kind of like, oh, it was a cool term. And it's like,
we even have boogaloo records in Quebec that were made by French Canadians.
Well, yeah, isn't there that record by like Donald Lautrec, like Boogaloo Baby or something?
Right. And which is like Boogaloo sur le bord du lac or what?
Oh, Boogaloo on Bord du Lac by Brian Redman and the Soundbox,
which is an instrument. It's like an instrument. Great instrument.
Yeah, mod really instrumental. Like definitely not boogaloo music. And then there wasn't there a group literally called Les Boogaloo?
I think so.
And like the records suck, but like, you know, it was just a term. It's like the same thing. It's like, if I'm not mistaken, like the B-side of But It's All Right by J.J. Jackson is just like kind of an instrumental. It's called like Boogaloo Baby.
Right.
And like, it's not Boogaloo. Like, that's actual Boogaloo. And then there's the really confusing thing how there's like all those like white racist guys in the States now call themselves the Boogaloo Boys. And it's like, you are taking a like Latin American and black term. And fuck those guys, man.
The
anyway.
Same way we could relate that to the last two records we played.
Yeah, the skinhead
with
thing.
The skinheads.
These guys are so unoriginal. They're so unoriginal and racist that they end up like using terms for people who are like progressive and, you know, black or Latin or, you know, just like white guys who are into Jamaican culture. And it's just like, you were so unoriginal with coming up with like racist names for your groups that like you are frustrating. It's so frustrating,
but it's ironic.
Yeah,
I mean, there was one of the staples of early, we call it skinhead reggae,
yeah,
like the 1969 era of reggae.
Makes me think of like the song, like the Israelites, like that
right.
era. Desmond Dekker. Yeah.
Desmond Dekker is great.
And sure.
he was loved by the, you know, the skinhead culture.
Huge. I mean, that was like the number one record.
There's a record called Skinhead Moonstomp. It's a ska reggae record.
Yeah.
Where they reference skinheads. So they were, they were enamored.
These were the people who were buying
in Jamaican music.
Well, they were the ones buying the records. You know, it's like you look at Jamaican records in the 1960s. It's like look at like the Blue Beat label in London. You know, in England, it's like in the Panama record label. It's like these were the original fans, and they were white kids from the United Kingdom. It's like you always got to say like the UK kids were the most progressive music fanatics. You know, it's like even think about it in a context of like an album like Pet Sounds by the Beach Boys, where it was kind of like. Here in North America, but like in Britain, they were like, this is the best music we've ever heard. You know, it's like, it's always kind of been like that. And then, but especially with like the whole ska and the reggae and the skinhead thing, where it's just like, same thing with the boogaloo term now. It's just like, it's so pathetic that it's just like, and it's horrible where it's like now like this word, it's like the same thing too. It's like how like the like 45 for 45 records also ended up being like Trump's number. It's like what a kick in the face to us. It's like now if I like hashtag 45, I click on it, it's just like a picture of him hugging the American flag with a pukey fucking face. Anyway, any white supremacist, if you happen to be listening to the show that celebrates minorities music, stop stealing the terms, man. Just fuck you. Just get out of here. And that's coming from a Jewish guy, okay? So come pick on me. Next, what are we going to have next? The Torah boys running around, you know, the bar mitzvah club and the Caitlin. Stop stealing our shit, okay?
Oy,
get out of here. Oy vey. Oy vey is right, mon ami. All right, anyway, I think that's enough yelling. Can I solicit you one more?
I think
just from the title of this record, you're going to take it. This track is called New Breed from a Soul Seed.
Well, yeah.
Yep. That's all I got to say.
Yeah, well, there was the term New Breed we use early in the episode relates more to, you know, slowed down
popcorn rhythm and blues,
rhythm and
early
blues.
60s.
But
interestingly,
here's another
term
that was taken up in the soul scene, just like boogaloo, New Breed.
Yeah. It's interesting because like the term New Breed in the 60s, like anytime you kind of see a record that has New Breed in the title, It has nothing to do with what we call like New Breed,
right.
Blues.
No, came from collectors.
Yeah, it was really James Brown who kind of popularized the term New Breed with his instrumental records.
Same as popcorn.
Yeah, you know, popcorn's just a
you came know, out of Belgium.
It's just a word, you know. It's like
no,
it's like
I mean,
yeah, I know.
The popcorn, you know, James Brown
again. That's another one. The popcorn, yeah. So pretty much, just James Brown is responsible for all these words. so anyhow, so this is a tune called "New Breed from a Soul Seed" by Prince Brownell on a super cool looking label called a BEM Soul Record, and it is literally a picture of a guy with like the sole of his shoe showing.
It looks like early 70s.
I think it's like 69 70. It's around that era. It's definitely more on the funky side. It's a Los Angeles record. It's got an LA address on it, by this gentleman called Prince Brownell. I think you're just gonna dig this. This came directly out of my collection. I was kind of just going through a little shelf the other day of stuff, and I put this on, and I was like, yeah, Pat.
To the needle.
Exactly. It ends up on the show. So let's do it. New Breed from a Soul Seed by Prince Brownell. New Breed from a Soul Seed, Prince Brownell. Well, I'm sitting here by myself because Pat ran downstairs to go find a record to play. And instead of being professionals and, you know, stopping and editing this out, I decided, you know what, I'll just talk by myself for a while. You know, I can really spill the beans about Pat while I'm here talking by myself. Yeah, I hear him laughing and yelling from downstairs. I think Pat's really going to dig this New Breed from a Soul Seed record, but what you guys don't know is that Pat's actually broke, and I have to give him these records for free now. Yeah, he lost all his money on Bitcoin and Ethereum. Yeah, Bitcoin. Stop listening! You're not supposed to listen. Anyway, yeah, how unprofessional. But anyway, how you doing down there looking for that record? Okay, he got one. Anyway, so this was Alone Time with Ben. Very exciting. I'm just going to put this one over at Pat's box here. Oh, here comes Lick. Oh, here he comes. He found one in the basement. Pat, I was just shooting the shit with the listeners by myself. I just figured, you know, why not?
I did that with Mod Marty once.
How's Marty doing? I miss that guy.
I need to call him. Yeah. Well, the whole reason why I went looking for a record is that I was gonna play that
the Scatolites
at the end of the show.
That's
and
right.
Then I thought, no, let's play it back to back with
makes sense, you know, do a little ska corner, you know.
So, yeah, because we're nearing the end of the show, and of course, yeah, you've put that record right.
I put it right next to the Boogaloo thing because I figured, well, you have a credit with me. We might as well just clear that up as fast as possible.
Because that's pure funk.
That's funk. That's like I said, it's like funk. 69, probably 70. It's got like the wah-wah guitar on right. it. But how cool is that record label?
Yeah.
With the guy's foot?
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it.
It's almost skinhead looking.
A little bit, eh?
But the guy has an afro.
So a little not.
But no, it looks like the skinhead that would be doing the moon stomp.
Doing a stomp.
Yeah, that's just pure...
It's funky.
Pure funk.
So that's cool. We got some soul music today. We got some ska. We got some boogaloo. We got some funk. We really kind of covered a lot of bases. No garage rock this time, unless you're ending with a garage track right now.
No, I'm not. But
it's fine.
You did sell me. I did. Underworld.
Yeah, you did just get your hands today on like one of the best garage punk records of all time. But it's been. You've heard it on this show before.
And it's probably going to play in the background. So.
Ba-dum, boom, 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 ba-dum, ba-dum. Oh, yeah. All right.
So that's why I needed to go downstairs and find a record we haven't played on the show and that I recently got. So sometimes I'll get like two or three at a time and I'll just play one for the show.
Right.
So here's the one I've recently acquired that I haven't played.
Okay.
And
so wait, are we finishing up now? Didn't you have one last thing you wanted to kind of touch on or
right, and it's gonna go right with this track.
Oh, okay, great.
Because I have a TV recommendation for you.
Okay.
So
sorry, I'm very distracted by like the man, did someone just die outside? Like
you might hear sirens.
Sirens and police.
Passing by.
And buses. And, oh, it's an ambulance. Okay, it's all good. Everyone's safe, I think.
Okay, let's hope so. Yeah. So, it's like a new series season on TV. And we're the type of guys that like to Netflix and chill.
Oh, right? Yeah. We're couch people.
But especially Netflix. That's why I'm mentioning Netflix.
Oh, yeah, for
but
sure.
Every once in a while, there's going to be a good, good old network TV series that is going to pop up. And my wife are just going to get hooked on.
Yeah, Taryn and I do it all the time. We PVR everything, yeah. All kinds of network stuff.
PVR is my second name.
Yeah. And DJ PVR.
So I was not a huge fan. So this is a reboot. I wasn't a huge fan of the original series. And we're talking here about the Wonder Years. You're a bit too young for that. I think the original series was in 88.
Yeah.
So,
I obviously have heard of it and I'm like kind of familiar with it, but it's just like, you know, it's not like something that like, I ever watched on reruns or anything. I mean, I was born in 92. So, I mean, like, you know, when I was a kid, I was watching, you know, Frasier and Seinfeld and stuff, you know, as a little kid. But, like, you know, the Wonder Years was not something I ever...
But what's funny...
But wasn't it one of those kind of, like, hokey family shows? Like,
it was sort of...
With a lesson at the end of every episode or something?
Sort of a... Sometimes a tearjerker and, you know...
Yeah. One of those.
Sentimental...
What network was it? Was it, like, an ABC?
ABC, I believe.
Something like that. Yeah.
And... So, it's based on a coming of age story of a young kid, you know, growing up, and it's based. I think the original series was between 1968 and 1973, so it's based in that era.
Oh, okay, so it was a 60s show. Oh, I didn't even know it went that far back. Yeah.
So they rebooted it
in the 80s, and then rebooted it now.
No.
It's from the 80s, but it takes place in the 60s.
That's
right. Okay. Got you.
So now the new series is also based. The first episode is in 1968.
Ooh.
We obviously don't like that era at all.
No, I hate the 60s.
Because we just played something that was right around, that could have eventually play on the show.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely the right sound from the right era, yeah.
But the difference with this new series is that they're, you know, it's a coming of age story about a black family.
Oh, okay.
In Montgomery, Alabama.
So the music must be really good in the show. Here we go.
Why do you think I recommend it?
That's right.
Yeah. In the first episode, one of my top 10 favorite songs of all times.
Oh, yeah.
Sam Cooke, A Change Is Gonna Come.
Yeah, for sure. That's like the civil rights anthem. You know, we've talked about that that track at length on this show. So of course, naturally, yeah.
So they played that on the first episode, and also another, probably my number one instrumental of all time.
Oh, yes, Green Onions.
Yeah, that's right, sir.
Okay. So they're not really digging too deep into the backlog of soul music, but you know what? I'm sure you'll get to one. That'll be a surprise.
Here's why you should listen. You should watch it. The father is Dulé Hill, an actor I liked from another series that I was crazy about, Suits. He was in there, and he was in a few other shows I can't remember off the cuff.
What's his name?
Dulé Hill.
Hang on, I want to just quickly.
So the father in the series is a musician.
Okay.
So he plays, you know, sort of. We don't hear really in the first episode what kind of music he plays, but you can figure out. You know, it's.
Soulful. Hey, he's a black guy. It's 1968. It's probably some funky soul band. Yeah.
Funky soul.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's also a professor of music.
Oh, wow.
The kid, which is the whole story is based around, the voice is by John Cheadle, another actor I really
John Cheadle.
Like.
Yeah, John yeah, Cheadle. Sure, yeah.
And in the first episode, is it the first or the second? Doesn't matter. There's the death of Dr. Martin Luther King in it.
So that's right. That's 68, yeah.
They go through that. So there's the clothes for me. There's the music.
Yeah.
There's the historical aspect.
That's
right. There's nothing you're not going to like about
this. Really does. It sounds right up my alley, yeah.
And the kid, I think it starts off, I think the first scene starts off, it's the kid on his... on his cougar bicycle.
Oh, it's like banana bike.
Banana bike.
Yeah. Which you and I both have, yeah.
So, have I convinced you yet?
Yeah, I'll watch it for sure.
You should definitely.
That's right.
I think I'm already hooked.
You sold me.
Yep. And it deals also with racism.
Of course.
And the integration of you know, black kids and school, so it's deep on multiple levels. Highly recommend.
Sounds fantastic. Yeah, I'm into it.
So I think that's going to be the track I'm going to present to you. I don't think we've played. If not, I'm screwed.
Yeah.
So. My description is live soul party track listing some 60s dance crazes. It's from 1965. Are you familiar with Mickey Denton? The track is on World Artist.
The name's very familiar. Yeah.
It's called One More Time. So let me hand it to you.
I don't think we've ever played that. Mickey Denton, One More Time.
I think you're going to approve.
Well, it's a Detroit record because it's written by Duke Browner and produced by Harry Bulk. And Harry Bulk was the guy behind the... Well, not behind... He brought a lot of people to New York and recorded them on that label Big Top Records.
Yep.
Pink. Like Bobby Smith. And,
the pink, pink label.
And he did a lot of productions for the group The Volume. So he was kind of... Yeah, he was this...
The Volumes or the
Volumes, yeah. They had a record on this label too. So yeah, he was kind of bringing. It's funny, but this is actually a Pittsburgh label. But yeah, he was like this guy from Detroit who was kind of always sourcing talent from Detroit and either taking them to like New York and Pittsburgh and Duke Browner. Well, it says B. Browner was the songwriter, but it was actually this guy Duke Browner who has like a big Detroit Northern Soul record that's worth like one of those. you know, for millionaire only kind of things. So yeah, kind of cool Detroit connection here. So anyway, thank you everyone for listening, and we will now end off with One More Time by Mickey Denton. You can find me on Instagram, Shulman the Soul Man, and on Facebook and our Addicted to the Needle page, and our Instagram Addicted to the Needle page, and
you Pat's can all find kinds me of places. Instagram at Park Avenue. Come and say hello.
All right. Well, thank you for listening, and let's give it up one more time for Mickey Denton.
Keep on keeping on.